From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, cinematographer Janusz Kaminski, has shot 13 films with Steven Spielberg?
Correct, yes, 13.
I got that right. Going from Schindler's List to AI to one of my favorites that you shot with him, Minority Report. I really love the way
Thank you. That movie looks.
To his newest Lincoln, but you've worked with other filmmakers as well. You worked with Judd Apatow on Funny People. You won two Oscars for Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List. I'd love to talk to you, but now we're out of time because I went over all your credits. We have nothing. Okay, goodbye.
Thank you. Great being here, and goodbye.
But we were talking just before we got started. You moved to the States and lived in Chicago for a long time. How did you end up there from
Poland? Well, this is a very kind of interesting story. I left Poland in 1980 as a part of the Socialist Amateur Filmmaking Club. And I went to Greece to make a little documentary there. And as we were traveling through Eastern Europe, parts of the Eastern Europe, and as we were entering the borders with Greece, we were getting tremendous enthusiastic responses from the border agents, simply because Poland started rebelling against the government. This is 1980. The first strike started.
The time that Andrzej Wajda was making all those great films.
Correct. The Solidarity movement became more prevailing, so we were getting the great support from just strangers on the streets.
Sure.
So as we were traveling to Greece, and mind you, I was traveling with a group of about 6-7 people, and it was a semi-business trip because that's the only way you could obtain passports during that time. So as we're traveling to Greece, my friend and I wanted to buy a pair of jeans because most of the Eastern European kids, they want to buy jeans, you know. So we walk into a flea market in Athens and talking to each other, and how the hell are we going to buy a pair of jeans? We don't speak English, we don't speak Greek. A Polish man approaches us and says, "Hi, I can help you to buy the jeans." So we bought the jeans. He took us for coffee. And I said, "What's going on? What happened? How did you end up being here?" And he told me the story that him and his brother, in 1968, they left Poland. They went to Vienna. They asked for a political asylum with an organization called International Rescue Committee. And they were shipped to Chicago. He says to me that he lives in Seattle. He's an engineer for Boeing. There's not much of a life for immigrants in Seattle. But Chicago has a large Polish population. His brother lives in Chicago. So if we decide to do that, call his brother, and his brother will help us. So this is a very interesting story because all the way on the way back to Poland, we're beginning to think how not to go back to Poland.
Right.
We packed our stuff, you know, and as we're camping overnight in Bratislava, we separated from the group, and we hitchhiked to the border between Austria and Czechoslovakia at that time. And we went to address, he told us. We applied for political asylum. We called his brother. His brother said, "Yes, we'll help you out." After 6 months, we were flying to Chicago. His brother picked us up from the airport, showed us the Polish Rescue Committee, Polish Welfare Association, helped us to get a rent, help us to get an apartment.
Right.
And I've never seen the guys ever since.
Oh, my God.
So that's why Chicago.
My guess is Janusz Kaminski should be making his own life into a movie, but he works as a very gifted cinematographer with many filmmakers. Many times, of course, with Steven Spielberg. His newest collaboration with Spielberg is Lincoln. It's The Treatment, which you can also listen to at KCRW.com. One of the things I love about what you do is you concentrate on faces in a way that almost no cinematographers tend to not do. And you don't get your due for that. I mean, you really like faces and the upper cheekbones and eyes a lot. How did that come? How did that become an area for you to concentrate in?
Well, I think essence of a performance is to look at the actor's face and the actor's ability to work that face, work that performance through facial expressions. Also, you know, to some degree, I see the face as the window to the world, in a sense. You know, if the performance is great in the close-up, you can forgive imperfections in the wide shot. And I'm talking about imperfections from my point of view. When the lighting is not dramatic enough or the lighting is not serving the story in the wide shot the way I want it to serve, I know that I've got a close-up, and that close-up will capture the audience's attention because it's all about close-ups to some degree.
You've got to do that a lot in Lincoln because so much of that is watching the way he deliberates, watching the way he interacts with other people. And I like the movies in which you tend to work in interiors a lot,
right,
just because you really concentrate on a kind of really subtle dramatic backlighting in those instances and getting those faces too. That must be something you really like doing.
You know, for me, Lincoln was almost like making a play. sitting next to the camera and watching the actors performing and listening to Daniel Day-Lewis's monologues and dialogue was just amazing, you know. And the world of that movie was that we really didn't use any usual tricks in terms of, you know, moving the camera and quick cuts, because the words were so strong. The writing by Tony Kushner was so captivating.
The playwright, by the way,
right? Which is just we didn't have to like get away from that, you know. And consequently, we had many wide shots, and in those wide shots, the camera would gradually, slowly push towards Daniel Day-Lewis's close up and concentrate on that performance, you know. So it was a very elegant movie, and I must say, for me, it was a relatively easy movie to make, simply because the camera did not move as much. You know, the moment the camera moves, the perspective changes, everything changes, the lighting changes. So the lighting that you can create in those medium shots and close-ups, when the camera moves, falls apart. In these instances where the movie was rather static, I was able to really refine the lighting and support a story with creating dramatic lighting. And, you know, there's so many things to lighting. You know, I use the example of Schindler's List, where Amon Göth, played by Ralph Fiennes, was always lit with front bright lights, simply because there was no ambiguity about that man. He was just an atrocious human being. Where if you think of Oskar Schindler, played by
Liam Neeson,
his character had a lot of ambiguities. He was not set to save lives. You know, he was there to make money. So he's very frequently lit by shadow, half-light, until to the end when he finally turns towards the camera at the end in the limo and says, I could have saved so many lives. You got this bright light for the first time.
Almost like he's being interrogated at that point.
But also he realized what his life was about. He was about discovering humanity. So with Lincoln, I love creating this almost like a wedge where you have people talking on both sides of the table, and that light gradually gets dimmer on people closer to Lincoln until Lincoln is the brightest object in the frame, because essentially it's about Lincoln. That's what the movie is about. And you wanted to listen to his words. You wanted to watch his performance because it is such a important issue.
As you talk about, though, Janusz, I could see that could almost lend itself to being lighted in an overly dramatic fashion, and you chose to not do that. You let the drama come to him a little bit, didn't you?
Right, but I felt there were instances of very dramatic lighting, particularly, you know, when we were making an attempt not to fully reveal his eyes. And the reason for doing that was from, you know, Lincoln had very deeply set eyes, and all the existing photos of Lincoln reflect that, you know. So we wanted to preserve that kind of authenticity. But also, you know, it was a very strong battle for him to convince his staff members and congressmen to go for that kind of a legislation. So later on, as he's achieving more and more success in convincing people to go with his idea, I would introduce more light into his eyes so people would see that he's really as altruistic, as honest as his words are.
And also, I find myself aware of when you have tall actors, the way you use their size. I mean, the way you use Liam Neeson in Schindler's List, the way you use Daniel Day-Lewis here. You're very aware of the size of the actors and the way you shoot them. And that always strikes me as being really interesting.
And again, in terms of the reality of Lincoln, we all know that he was a rather tall person. So honestly, occasionally we had to create a little bit of a platform for Daniel, who is tall. Daniel is, I think, 6'1", but yet, you know, some of the actors were relatively tall, so we had to create a little platform for Daniel so he would be taller than the rest of the crew.
Could you make him a lot bigger than Tommy Lee Jones, for example?
Correct, yes.
It's the treatment. I'm talking a lot with Janusz Kaminski. I'm glad he's here. His newest film as cinematographer is Lincoln's latest collaboration with Steven Spielberg. You can hear the show also at kcrw.com. But one of the things I was struck by, and I talked to you about this a little bit before we started, is you shoot faces like a portrait artist. And that's got to be part of some of your inspiration. You bring this to the way you shoot movies. I'm very aware of the faces. Foreheads. I can't think of anybody who thinks about people's brows and foreheads to the extent that you do.
I always get excited when it's the time for the close-up, you know. In War Horse, you know, I couldn't wait to shoot those close-ups, because you can do so much, you know, with just not just with the lighting, but the placement of the camera, what's behind the actors, the way you compose, you know. For example, the operator that I work with for the last 15 years, when we started working with each other, we had to kind of retrain each other for the composition. I like to put a little bit of a the frame line on the forehead, when normally you would include the entire head, but I like chopping that head off because it just becomes more intense, you know. And then the height of the camera, lower, higher. Strangely, 5 inches would make tremendous difference in terms of drama of the close-up. So I love close-ups.
But even in the movie like Funny People, which you did, I'm aware of the way you're lighting all those faces in those rooms, like in those clubs. I'm always aware of the faces there. And that's something I associate with you.
But that's a very interesting movie because we always wanted to make the movie to be a little bit more dramatic than at the end we made it.
There's a lot of blue in that movie for that reason,
blue,
too, isn't
looking
there?
At Lenny as a Lenny Bruce story. That was our kind of a blueprint. And Judd was very much interested in making that kind of movie. And he wanted to be, particularly in the clubs, very dramatic about the lighting because he didn't want to show this comedian played by Adam Sandler to be just this happy, optimistic person. He had a lot of darkness in him. So the lighting would reflect that, particularly in the close-ups, you know?
Because I find myself wondering if you played a lot before you, or even when you're not making movies, or you're shooting a lot of faces, you just shoot like the shoot faces yourself because you're clearly interested in that.
Well, I always admire the photographers that were able to go on the streets of New York and shoot with black and white negative, shoot those faces. You know?
Were you a fan of Ouija's stuff in New York?
I love Ouija's. I love Winograd. I love Cartier-Bresson and all the famous photographers. I was always very inspired and amazed by their work. You know, these days it's harder to do it because so many people have cameras right now. So the moment you take that camera on the street out of your bag, you become a suspect, you know? So it's very hard to shoot people in the streets. You know, I almost prefer recreating, if I take still photo, recreating street life, but in a way that where I bring the actors and almost try to create realistic portraits within the reality of the street life, but it's recreation. It's not capturing the documentary style way of street life.
But there's I was just saying to you, just going back to one of your earlier pieces, and then it connects me to Lincoln, Class of 61, which is set in 1861,
right.
not 1961. Just the way you shot those faces there. I'm really aware of those, again, those foreheads and those kind of interesting sort of three-quarter profiles, which create a kind of drama without anybody saying anything.
Right. You know, Gregory Hablett, who became my friend during that movie.
And he directed that movie.
He directed the movie. He's a television director. He was very much interested in going outside what's expected. And again, the movie is a historical drama. It takes place in 1861. So there's, again, you have some liberty to create images that people are not very familiar with and to some degree introduce them to that period. And I was still relatively young. I wasn't really aware of, you know, the pressure of making big movies, the pressure of making big television pilot, you know. So I was just doing work that I felt was right for the period. And, you know, I work a lot from my instinct and from my gut feeling to some degree. And if you get collaborator, which means the director who's interested in those images, my God, I can go as far as my imagination goes. And that was the example with Julian Schnabel when we did Diving Bell and a Butterfly. Naturally, the script allowed it to be extremely innovative with the camera and lighting, but also there was a director who was not interested in conventional way of telling the story.
We'll take a break. There's so much
Thank
more
you.
To talk about. My guest is Janusz Kaminski. His newest film, as cinematographer, Steven Spielberg, is Lincoln. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
Welcome back to The Treatment, which you can hear at KCRW.com. We're talking about many things, including Lincoln with cinematographer Janusz Kaminski, whose newest film with Steven Spielberg is Lincoln. As you were talking about Diving Bell and the Butterfly, though, what I find myself thinking is you're attracted to material that is inherently very dramatic, and you find a way to sort of like subtly play with the drama we expect and kind of change our expectations about that. Even Funny People, which starts off as a comedy, turns out to be a very serious story, or How Do You Know, which again, starts off as a comedy. It almost has comedy-like lighting in the first few frames of the film. Then the lighting becomes more and more dramatic. You like things that have a kind of a real drama at the center, don't you?
You know, I'm interested in human stories. I'm not really... I mean, I will go and do, you know, Jurassic Park because I will do anything that Spielberg does. And not to say that I did not enjoy making the movie. It was fun. But I'm interested in the human drama. So, for example, when we made War of the Worlds, yes, it's a story about monsters coming from under the ground. But to me, essentially, it was the movie about father who's trying to reconnect with his kids, you know. And that's what attracted me to the movie, the drama of that individual character and how he relates to the kids, you know.
As you talk about that, I find myself thinking so much about that last shot in the movie, which is really kind of sweet, almost Norman Rockwell-like,
right,
but with this slight kind of undercurrent of fear in it.
Right. Well, Stephen loves Norman Rockwell. He owns many of his paintings.
Was that a reference point for you for that last shot?
Yeah, definitely that was a reference for that, yeah. And Stephen is attracted to that kind of beauty, the interesting relationship that we've got, that occasionally, you know, I'm able to introduce different aesthetics, as well as he's introducing aesthetics that I was not familiar with. But also I was able to project some of my aesthetics on his movies, you know.
Because okay, that there's that thing that kind of idealized the shot at the end of the movie, of that movie, but there's a sort of slight color blue on either side of the frame. And your use of blue, I mean, you play with blue in the way that cinematographers tend to use it very sort of starkly. You don't. You introduce it very subtly in the frames, don't you?
Correct. You know, I'm fascinated by the movies made in the 70s. And usually those movies had that kind of a pale white bluish.
Bluish gray kind of thing.
Yeah, bluish gray. Simply because many of them were shot in New York, different light. The movies were shot by cinematographers who were living in New York, so the aesthetics were different, you know. But that's my blueprint to some degree in terms of using colors. And naturally, there is a cinematographer named Storaro. His name is
Vittorio Storaro,
who is, you know,
who's a painter.
He's a painter, and he's definitely the biggest inspiration to most of us cinematographers. And he constantly spoke about using the color to evoke emotional feelings. It's not a new concept. Most of the psychologists, all the psychologists know about it. But to be able to verbalize that and use that on such a large palette as a movie screen, it's a really great achievement on his part to make the rest of the world aware that we're not just people about pretty pictures. We actually are storytellers that use composition, lighting, shadows, color, and we manipulate all those elements to tell the stories.
It's funny, you're mentioning 70s movies, and I can't help but think about that kind of decadence of 70s movies, especially New York. Is that something you found
This is another great thing, you know, because all those movies made in 70s, Vanishing Point, you know.
Vanishing Point? Oh, God, I love Vanishing Point.
Favorite movies, yeah, which talks about someone's individual's rebellion against the system.
And running for freedom.
Yes, and running for... That's my favorite movie. But because that movie criticized American system, right? So the censorship of Polish censorship embraced this movie, so we're able to watch it because for them, it was a way to show, look at this decadent America, sex-obsessed, you know, drugged out, you know, rebellious. You know, you don't want to go there. It's decadent. You will get killed there. And, of course, for me and many of us, we wanted to go there. This is a great country. This is a country where an individual rebels against the system, and I always rebelled against the system. I have an inherited rebellion against authority, you know.
It's funny. My guest who clearly loves American Decadence and Blue Jeans is Janusz Kaminski.
I definitely do.
His newest film, a cinematographer, is Lincoln. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I keep thinking about how much you communicate in silence. I mean, and you...
Correct.
A lot of these things you've done with Spielberg, these movies don't have as much dialogue. You have to communicate a lot without the use of dialogue. And that becomes, for me, almost the way you guys make films. And you must love that.
But this movie, Lincoln, it's the first movie
that you really
have to focus on the dialogue and the words. Because
was that tough for you? Because you've done so many films where you've been able to communicate a lot of drama without dialogue. Was it tougher to do something that, like you said, is in effect a stage play, when you are moving people around very slowly with a lot of wide shots, and they have to communicate with words and with pictures. Was that a tougher thing for you to do?
Not from the technical point of view. Usually on the movie, you know, you would adjust the light during the take. You know, when the camera moves, I would have the gaffer moving the light, the grips controlling the light. Here we didn't do that as much simply because the camera didn't move much, but also I didn't want to disturb the performance by any unnecessary movement outside.
So you became a spectator too, is what you're saying.
Of course, 100%. And you know, most of the movies that Steven does, there are moments where you're watching the scene and you just totally get lost in the story, in the words, you know?
Because I just think, just watching so many things to prepare for this, and there's so many silences. I mean, so much silence in AI. There's so much silence, or rather people not talking, rather, in War of the Worlds. We could sit here and name them with the exception of maybe The Terminal and Lincoln. Most of the movies you've done with him have been movies where there are large passages of the film where there's no dialogue.
Right. I mean, Steven loves the nonverbal language as well, you know, and he's a master of it, you know. And when we met in 1992, I believe, which is almost 20 years.
Had he seen Class of 61?
Class of 61 was actually made for DreamWorks. So this was a bit of a testing grounds for me, you know. It was very interesting because we're shooting Class of 61 in Georgia. And halfway through the movie, I was getting this secret messages. Oh, Steven really likes the Dailies. He would like you to do his next movie. But I'm thinking Jurassic Park 1 is his next movie. And Dean Candy, who is a very amazing cinematographer, was doing the movie. So once we finished Class of 61, Steven and I, we met. And he was very complimentary about the work on Class of 61. And he said, how would you feel about making this little black and white movie about Oscar Schindler, you know? And I said, be fantastic, you know? You know, I was so naive. I had no idea what that meant. You know, I didn't know the consequences of my professional life and my personal life that this movie would have, you know, and became really amazing beginning of great collaboration, you know.
Because part of this must be for you that with him, you're just waiting to hear if the movie's going to be, and you're going to do whatever it's going to be.
I pretty much do whatever movie he will do, you know, because they're always very exciting. They're always something new about the story I'm learning. And, you know, we're all progressing with the age, so there's things that he gets interested in, you know, as he's getting older. And there are new techniques in terms of how he wants to capture the moment of the performance. You know, it's getting more and more refined, you know.
It's interesting. We're talking about Steven Spielberg with one of his best-known collaborators, Janusz Kaminski, who's shot 13 films with him, won 2 Oscars working with him. His newest collaboration with Spielberg is Lincoln. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. As we're talking, Janusz, I just find myself thinking that a movie that does a lot of these things that we're talking about, a 70s movie by Jerry Schatzberg, mm-hmm. is Panic in Needle Park.
Right. Amazing movie.
That feels almost like it's black and white in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's constantly concentrating these faces, and also is constantly concentrating, or often rather, I should say, concentrating on anxiety and fear, which plays a big part in the way these movies
right.
work with Spielberg. Was that a movie that you saw a lot that meant something to you?
Well, I saw the movie when I was living in Poland. And again, talking about the American decadence, I was not really interested in the decadence, but just that freedom that hypothetically, in theory, you can do all that stuff, you know.
But that freedom, they often led to self-destruction.
Self-destruction, yes. Correct, you know.
But I was thinking about those faces and the way those people look, the way Al Pacino looks in that
right.
movie. And that kind of often attempt to suppress anxiety that is in many of these movies that you've shot one way or another. If that those states of anxiety that these characters experience that you shoot in that way that suggest black and white without being black and white is something that happened a lot in that movie as well, didn't it?
Well, I heard a statement. A statement had to do with the actor's ability to perform. And the statement was as such. The actors do not act like they used to in the black and white movies. And my theory is that the actors are equally good or perhaps even better than they used to be. What changed is the color. The color will really, to some degree, take away the audience's attention from the performance. Because if you get too much color, you get distracted. In black and white, the way black and white is lit, the void of color, you constantly focus on the face because usually that's the most, that's the brightest element in the frame. So you're really able to focus on that performance. So in my work, when I do close-up, I try to eliminate unnecessary colors. So I may use just white light and stay on the white side. I may use a little bit of a blue light or a little bit of a warm light to reflect the emotions of the character, but I hate combination of two different colors on people's faces, because I think to some degree it takes away from the audience to be able to focus on actor's performance. There's that thing about, you know, the eye goes to the brightest object in the frame. And frequently I try to make the face to be the brightest object, unless dramatically you wanted to go into silhouettes and half-life. But I want that element of the frame to be
but
the brightest.
But you don't even do a lot of that, though. You don't do a lot of silhouettes.
Occasionally we do. We had a couple of silhouettes
movie.
In
this more in this movie than most
correct.
Others you've done.
Correct.
I mean, that seems to be something you're almost not interested in the idea of.
Well, because it was about honesty of the story and what Lincoln represented. So we didn't have to create too many ambiguities about his character. He didn't have to move through silhouettes and so forth, because it was very clear what he was about.
Because if we're talking about Vanishing Point, which is another movie in which the protagonist doesn't say much.
No.
He probably has about 30 lines of dialogue in the entire movie. But yet there's a lot that we get out of Barry Newman just in that car and the way he's concentrating. And was that John Alonso who shot?
Yes, I think it was
John Alonso. Yeah. It was. Yeah, who must be basically a big favorite of yours, John Alonso.
Well, you know, I was a John Alonso's intern in 1984 in Chicago.
Really?
Yes, when he was making a movie called Nothing in Common with
Tom Hanks and Jackie Gleason.
And Jackie Gleason, yeah. And he was a wonderful man, John Alonso. They were shooting a scene at some kind of a golf club, and I was watching the scene from behind the fence, you know, and I saw John in the distance in his beautiful white cap, you know, smoking the Sherman cigarette. And I was thinking, how can I get there? And there goes location manager that I knew from Chicago. And I said, this is John Alonso. Can I meet him? So he says, yeah, jump over the fence. So I literally jump over the fence, introduce myself to John. And I said, John, I've always admired your work. Chinatown was amazing. And then other movies. And he says, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm studying film at Columbia College. You know, I want to be a cinematographer. And he says, come more to the set. So after a few visits, you know, I finally asked him, look, I would like to be your intern, and I'd like to be able to come to the set every day. And he said, be my pleasure. And that was basically my introduction to Hollywood movie making, just like that. John was just a total gentleman. He was so calm and accommodating and sweet and nice. You know, it's good to meet those people in life, because subconsciously they become your role model, you know. So later on, when you try to model your career, your behavior on somebody, you kind of go back to those guys. You don't go to the guys who are, you know, screamers and have tantrums. You go to the guys who are calm, you know.
I'm sorry, we're out of time. Will you come back and do the show
again?
I'll
come back again anytime.
Thank you so much for being here. My guest is John Skaminski, whose newest film as cinematographer is Lincoln. A recording engineer at KCRW, J.C. Swanick, who also mixes the show. It is edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm going to go get myself a new pair of jeans. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.